You're listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. For I Will Be With You. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible.
Welcome back to the For I Will Be With You podcast for the 10th week of the year from March 4th to March 10th. We're going to cover Genesis 39:12 to Genesis 42:6. In Genesis 39:12, we're actually going to repeat the last verse from last week because there's a second thing I want to say about it. But in we have Joseph, who's been sold into slavery in Egypt by his brothers, and he's been purchased by Potiphar, who's a powerful, wealthy man. And he's left a home to run Potiphar's household. And Potiphar's wife is very attracted to Joseph. And it says, the commentary says, that Joseph was amazingly handsome. He was a very, very handsome man. And he also was spiritually gifted, so he exuded a special sort of aura. And he was young, he was only 17 years old. So Potiphar's wife, in the corrupt Egyptian society at the time, thought nothing of trying to seduce him. So she comes after him, and he runs away, but she ends up grabbing his garment, which at the time, like a one-piece, like a robe or something, and it comes off. And because he ran away so quickly from her that his garment was left in her hands. So Genesis 39:12 says, she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me. So what's interesting about this on one level, there's many interesting things about it, but as some commentators have asked, why does Joseph refuse the advances of this woman? He has been sold by, he's been thrown out by his family. And he has been sent to a society where this kind of thing is totally normal. According to the history and commentary, Egypt at this time was a morally degenerate society of the highest order. And things like married women having sex with servants was completely, you know, normal behavior. So the question is, why doesn't he just go along with it? And he's a young man, he's 17 years old. You'd think that a lot of us might just say, okay, well, here we are. I've been thrown out by my family. They've rejected me. So what do I have to lose by adopting this new way of life? And, you know, what's interesting is that there's an idea that he refuses the advances of Potiphar's wife out of a sense of ethics. He's been raised by Jacob, who was a tremendous wise man and righteous man, and he learned biblical values, Torah values throughout his life, and he knew that he wasn't supposed to behave immorally, even though he was not home anymore, and even though his family had, as far as he could tell, completely rejected him. So why was he loyal to his family's belief system when his brothers wanted him dead? And one of the answers is that he understood that he had a higher purpose in life, and he needed to live up to that higher purpose. And maybe he also had a sense that we have in the program of not wanting to expose yourself too much to bad behavior. You know, there's a saying in the program that if you hang around a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut. And meaning if you hang around a bar, you're eventually going to drink, probably, unless you're on some incredible level that most of us are not. But Joseph understood that he had a higher purpose in life, a purpose that God had chosen for him. He had a mission to accomplish, regardless of what happened. And maybe for us, as we struggle with addiction recovery, we should also remember that God has a purpose for us. And if we have faith, we can survive in a hostile spiritual environment, because for us, we are like Joseph sometimes. We've been thrust into environments, in recovery, we're thrust into environments that are not hospitable to us morally, and it's a challenge. So we can remember this story to keep ourselves strong. And it doesn't go well for Joseph anyway. He gets caught and thrown in jail, and he's sent into jail, which the commentators describe as a pit or a dungeon, like a really awful place. And he's there for 10 years. So from age 17 to 27, he's in a hole in the ground, basically, in punishment for refusing to have sex with his master's wife, something that wasn't even really against the law at that time in that place. But he felt he was up to a better purpose than that. But he's punished very severely. Now, when he's in the jail, two of the other inmates who were servants of Pharaoh have dreams. And I'm not going to get into it too much here, but basically Joseph is successful at interpreting their dreams. And he predicts that one of the servants of Pharaoh will be put to death and another one will be reinstated. And he's correct in both cases. And Joseph says in Genesis 14, he says to the guy who is getting freed from jail, who he predicted would get freed from jail, he says, "But have me in thy remembrance when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house," meaning out of jail. So Joseph is asking a favor of this guy, which is kind of understandable after 10 years in prison and having played a little bit of a role in freeing this guy. He's saying, hey, you know, put in a good word for me. Maybe I get sprung from jail. But that's not what happens. And instead, this guy forgets all about him. And you know, this is very natural. And I think we've all been there in our drinking and using time. You know, the people who helped us out, well, what have you done for me lately? You know, forget you. He completely forgets. He deliberately forgets about Joseph. He doesn't have anything to do with him. Some little, you know, former slave in prison is worth nothing to him. He forgets all about him, and Joseph stays in jail for another 2 years. So the commentary reminds us that this is not some, like, legal issue going on here. This is the hand of God. God keeps Joseph in jail for 2 more years as a punishment. And the punishment is for the fact that Joseph didn't have faith in God to get him out of jail. He turns to a person to get him out of jail. And this brings up a tricky issue in recovery and in faith as well, which is that we have to do our own work in life. You know, God will take care of us and God has a plan for us, but we have to do our side of the work. So what does that mean? It means you can't, you know, lie in bed all day and expect, you know, money and food to come flying in the window and you do nothing. You know, but it also means you can't assume that you and other people can take care of everything in your life. You have to somehow figure out what the path is. But this story can remind us about who's really in charge as we seek to put our lives back together again in recovery. We have to connect with other people in the program. We have to trust other people. We have to, you know, work with other people. But we can't turn these people into powers in our lives, higher powers. That is a mistake. There's only one higher power in our lives, and that's God. So it's a little tricky to navigate, but this story is can remind us of the intricacies of dealing with that. Now, as we fast forward 2 years, we're in Genesis 41:2, and we're in a famous section of the Bible where Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, has a dream. And he dreams that there are 7 fat cows coming out of the Nile River, which was the most important river in Egypt. It was one of their idolatrous gods. They actually worshipped the river. So 7 says, "And behold, there came out of the river 7 cows, well-favored and fat-fleshed, and they fed in the reed grass. And behold, 7 other cows came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other cows upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed cows did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat cows." So this is, the dream repeats with corn, with stalks of grain, fat stalks of grain grow, and then thin stalks of grain appear and consume the fat stalks. So this is a famous dream and Pharaoh is unable to interpret it. And the commentary also says that Pharaoh had all kinds of people around him who tried to interpret this dream. It wasn't like he was so, everybody was so stupid they couldn't figure it out. He had a lot of people trying to come up with an understanding, but Pharaoh was not satisfied. So finally, this fellow who Joseph, whose dream Joseph interpreted in prison 2 years earlier, speaks up because he realizes that Pharaoh's in a very bad mood and bad things can happen in the court when Pharaoh's in a bad mood. He says, there's a guy in prison, 10 floors below us, down under the ground in this horrible dungeon that you've created, and he can interpret dreams. Maybe you should talk to him. So finally he remembers, quote-unquote, remembers Joseph. And Joseph is brought up to interpret the dream. And Joseph's interpretation of the dream is that there's going to be 7 years of plenty, meaning there's going to be, Egypt was an agricultural society, there's going to be 7 years of vast produce of grain and food, followed by 7 years of famine. And Joseph recommends that Pharaoh appoint somebody to oversee storage of excess food to save up for the famine years. But this image of the 7 fat cows being consumed by the 7 lean cows is a metaphor for addiction and relapse and recovery, because what I think we've all seen, unfortunately, is that addiction can sort of consume our lives, and certainly our material possessions, and relapse will as well. And I was reflecting on this as I was thinking about this today for this podcast, that I heard a share once about a man who became clean from using heroin, and his life kind of flourished, and he was able to put together a successful career, and was living a nice life, and then he became involved in drugs again after several years, and he described his home being sort of emptied out of possessions, paintings, furniture, grand piano, everything just being taken out to pay for these drugs till he had nothing. And this is sort of what we have here in this dream, the fat years being consumed by the lean years. And if you have sober time, you can relate to maybe this idea that those thin cows are out there waiting to consume us. So here comes Joseph, 29 years old, after 12 years in a dungeon. And Pharaoh says, hey, kid, I hear you can interpret dreams. What have you got for me? And Genesis 41:16 says, "And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, 'It is not in me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace.'" Meaning, Joseph saying, I am not going to interpret your dream. God will interpret your dream, and I will describe what God's interpretation is. So this is an act of great humility. And, I think a lot of our stories involve the opposite. Someone says, "Hey, I hear you're good. Oh, yes, I'm the best," right? I mean, it's all about me, right? I'm in charge. I'm the best. But really, a lot of the time, we're better off if we can keep in mind that God is running the show. And if we're doing well, or we have talent and wisdom, perhaps we are, at least in part, a channel of God's will for us. Also, you have to really be struck by Joseph's poise here. I think for most of us, if we'd spent from age 17 to 29 in a dungeon and then quickly pulled up and, given a quick bath and a new suit and sent to have a one-on-one meeting with the most powerful man in the world, and Pharaoh was really the most powerful king in the world at the time, he handles himself pretty well. He tells Pharaoh what the dreams mean, and then he suggests that Pharaoh appoint somebody, and he means himself, to oversee this process, and Joseph quickly becomes the second most powerful man in the world. So it's very interesting, the turnabout. And I think a lot of us have had this experience. Once you stop using, there's an opportunity to really become who you're meant to be. You can emerge from a dungeon, from the pit of addiction, and sometimes quite quickly turn almost into like a different what seems like a different person. It was you all along, but the, you know, the internal person, if you understand that you're a channel of God, that can make you come alive. So now Joseph is appointed the viceroy of Egypt. He's made it to be the second, really the second most powerful man in the world. And he's given the authority to collect the food. So in Genesis 41:48 it said, "And he," meaning Joseph, "gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the field which was round about every city, laid it up in the same." So there was so much food growing, it was literally just like piles of it lying around. It was like nothing, no one had ever seen anything like it before. But I think it's important, like always, with Bible interpretation and Torah study, to go beneath the surface. So obviously on the surface, we understand that there's a surplus of food and Joseph arranges for it to be stored for the famine. But there's this interesting idea that comes up, that there's food just lying around about every city, just laying on the street. Now, it takes Joseph to ensure that it was used wisely and not wasted, because it could easily have been wasted. That's the untold story here. It wasn't so much that they had the surplus, it's that they used it. And beyond being sort of like wise and practical, this is a spiritual concept as well. And there are ways, if we can look around ourselves, we can see that there are good things lying around all about us. There's wisdom, there's good recovery, there's stories, there's good people, there's spiritual examples, there's learning. If we can see it and we can pick it up and save it and use it for ourselves, we can preserve ourselves through the hard times that may be coming. And I think for all of us, we know, you know, sometimes you have a good day and sometimes you have a bad day. When you have a bad day or a bad week or even a bad year, you know, what are you going to draw on? Are you going to be able to draw on that wisdom and the goodness that was all around you at the time? If you recognize that it was there and you recognize that you needed to use it, you can store it up and save it to carry you through the bad times. So now we go back, finally, in Genesis 42:1, we go back to Israel, where Jacob has been. Here's Jacob. He's an old man now. He thinks that his son Joseph, who was his favorite son, is dead. And or at least he never really knows. He thinks he was torn apart by a wild animal. And it's now, you know, 14, 15 years later. He's still in a lot of grief, and he sees, and one thing also you have to realize about Jacob and Isaac were very, very rich people. They had a lot of land, a lot of livestock. So although the famine, I'm sorry, I got that count of years wrong. It was 12 years. It's now 19 years later, because we've had it's 12 years of Joseph being in prison, and then 7 years of fat years, and now a year or two of famine. So there's a famine affects the entire world, including the land of Israel. So there's no food where Jacob is either. But because he's wealthy, he and his sons have stuff to eat. But Jacob is nervous. His sons are walking around, you know, with food, and everyone else is starving to death. So he says in Genesis 42:1, he says, "Now Jacob saw there was corn in Egypt. And Jacob said to his sons, 'Why do ye look upon one another?'" Now this phrase, "why do ye look upon one another," also can be translated as, "why do you make yourselves conspicuous? Why do you show off that you have food and goods in this time of famine?" So, you know, Jacob has gone through many trials in his life, and he never questions the wisdom of God. And even so, he's very stressed out by this. And perhaps we can emulate this behavior in our own struggles. He's trying to do the right thing. He doesn't want to draw envy from other people. He recognizes that being envied is not a spiritually healthy state to be in, nor is envying other people. He doesn't want other people to do the sin of envy, so to speak, encourage other people to envy his sons. And so he sends his sons down to Egypt to get food. And also, I think they're starting to run out of food anyway. But, you know, it touches on this idea of envy and coveting what other people have, which is really, it's like a revolving door. You know, coveting and envy can make us act out and use drugs because we feel like we don't have enough in our lives, we need more, and somehow alcohol and drugs will fill in that hole. And then when we're in sobriety, envy and coveting and wanting what other people have can lead us right back out of the program, because those feelings are very deep. And if you feel like you don't have enough of things in your life, you know, maybe drugs will again help you. At least that's the way you think when you have an addict mind. So we have now in Genesis 42, 5 and 6, it says, "And the sons of Israel came to buy among those that came." Because, let me just pause for the Bible quote for a second. The entire world was showing up in Egypt because there was no food. It says, "And the sons of Egypt came to buy among those that came, for the famine was in the land of Canaan, and Joseph was the governor over the land, and it sold all the people of the land. And Joseph's brethren came and bowed down to him with their faces to the earth." So here you have this amazing scene. Here are these brothers, 10 brothers. Benjamin is not there, but the other 10 brothers, the ones who sold him into slavery 21 years earlier, they don't recognize him, obviously. They come down to Egypt, they see some big Egyptian official, this guy in Egyptian outfit, looked like, imagine like sort of King Tut with the makeup and the hat and all the stuff. They bow down to the ground. This guy's like the king. They don't realize they're bowing down to their brother who they sold into slavery. And if you remember the dream that Joseph had, they're fulfilling the prophecy of the dream. He said, "They're going to bow down to me." And here they are, bowing down to him. So if this were like a movie, you'd say this was payback time, right? Joseph is in power. His brothers are powerless. He's turned the tables. They wanted him dead. Now what's he going to do? So what does he do? Now Joseph does a couple of things here, and we're going to talk about them over the next couple of days. But he basically doesn't go for revenge. He plays a number of tricks on them. He puts them through some stressful experiences, but not for revenge. He's trying to get them to see that what they did to him was wrong, and he wants them to repent. Very big difference. You know, he accuses them of being spies, and he puts them in jail, and whatever, it's difficult for them. But he's not doing it out of spite. He's trying to be like a spiritual mentor to them. And, you know, if you turn the story around, we're also like the brothers, and I think many of us have been in some situation like this in some way. You know, throw yourself at the mercy of someone else, someone you've wronged. Boy, that is a story you hear in the rooms. You know, the addict comes back home or comes back to a former life and is really needs merciful behavior from someone he or she has wronged. So Joseph's behavior can be a model for us. You know, the goal is to repent. The goal is to understand God's will. It's not, you know, to be humiliated or to get revenge. So that's the message behind this part of the Bible.
You've been listening to the For I Will Be With You podcast. Daily reflections on recovery from the Bible. www.foriwillbewithyou.com